sweat technique.
Live from Constellation Field for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, this is the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's the Bees live from Constellation Field in Sugarland. Great to have Colton Gordon. Be interesting to see if he makes his big league debut this year. Lefty, they like him. They've had some injuries to the pitching staff. It'll be interesting. He's probably on that short list. A name that has been mentioned by Dana Brown on a couple of occasions is players that he has his eyes on.
Yeah, no, and when you start thinking about it, too, there's other guys in the pipeline, but the guys that they've called on for the most part that have played here have been guys that have kind of helped them out and stepped up for them. When you think about Joey Loperfido, when you think about King recently and the fact that he looks like a guy that they might be, you might see more of, Spencer Arrighetti. There are guys when they call, they get their number called, they're ready to go, and they've done well too. So he's a good kid, and as a lefty, you know that gives him a little extra advantage that they're looking at him. That's a good sign. You hope things work out for him.
All right. 713-780-ESPN. A Sports Illustrated hot take article that it's being deemed by one of us. 100 bold predictions for the 2024 NFL season. One of them, the Houston Texans will not increase their win total from last season because their schedule is too tough. Fair? Foul? Cash? Trash?
You know me. I've been more the guy that takes the schedule into concern, and they've got a first place schedule, and it's a tough schedule, and it's not just the teams and the names and the reputations of those teams from a year ago. It's the list of quarterbacks that you're going to face this year that are going to kind of up the ante from a season ago. You still have to, obviously, you know, you have to play your part. You play your part. You expect you're going to win that football game, but it's a little different scenario when you're playing a first place schedule with all these teams that made the playoffs last year and are significantly better. You still play your division. I get that, but when you're not playing, you know, you look at the teams that they were playing last year. When they played the Jets, they didn't have Rodgers. When they played Carolina and Atlanta and a lot of the bad teams, this year you're playing Detroit, you're playing Baltimore, you're playing the Chiefs. The ante was raised, so I don't think you can ignore that.
I put this on the rundown because it seems to be like the popular pushback about the two things I keep seeing the most are like the sophomore slump idea and the idea of the schedule. But I kind of harken back to a conversation, I believe it was this week or early this week, that we had about where the Texans ranked for against the rest of the league for as far as the quality of their starting lineup. And I think we all had them like, you know, 5, 6. And that's kind of where I take issue with things like this that talk about the schedule. Sure, the schedule is tough, but if the Texans have a top 5, 6 roster, they are also tough. I mean, I think when you talk to, you know, fans of not Kansas City, they don't fear anyone, but when you talk to fans of across the league, to having to see the Texans on the schedule after what they showed last year with how well C.J. Stroud played, with after now adding Stephon Diggs, I mean, it's obviously second half of the schedule, not having Tank Dell, getting him back. I think they fear you just as much as some of the Texans fans are now fearing the schedule because it's quote-unquote first place.
I just think that at the end of the day, when you're talking about if there's a game going down the stretch, the difference maker can be, instead of playing a lesser than, if you're playing a Detroit, a, you know, a Kansas City, a Baltimore-type team, that's where that it truly factors in. Yeah, you can, you know, it's just a different set of circumstances because the teams you're playing are loaded up and at a different caliber than a lot of the teams you played a year ago when you had one of the easier schedules in the NFL.
I think it's tangible. Like who you play is very much correlated in your record. Like if the Texans were to play the worst team in the NFL each and every week, what is their record going to be? If they play the best team in the NFL every single week, what is their record going to be? And the Texans didn't change there. The Texans are the Texans. So the schedule does play a huge part in what a win-loss record says. I think the Texans are improved from where they were a year ago, but because of their schedule, I think the Texans are going to win 10 games. So, like, I don't think they're going to improve, but I also don't think that they're going to drop off. I think they're going to be a 10-7 team, win the AFC South. I think they're a good enough team to handle a more difficult schedule. But I think if they had last year's schedule, they go 12-5. So I do think that the schedule comes into play. I do think that the schedule is tangible and it matters. Now, I do think that the Texans will be good enough to overcome a difficult schedule and still win the division.
Yes, and sometimes, too, where the schedule matters is you get more kind of conditioned playing an upward level opponent. So by the time you reach the playoffs, when you've kind of you've taken on some of the best in the league and you know what it takes, I think it can help you to be better conditioned. You might have lesser wins, but I think you might be a better overall team in terms of being prepared and conditioned to play really solid football teams.
I guess maybe this is a product of being a Texans fan. Now, going back to 2002, we're talking, 23 seasons, where it feels like we're constantly, as Texans fans, looking outward. We're always looking outward. What does this team have? What does this team have? Why should we be afraid of them? The Texans are now finally in a spot where they're not the hunted, because that's the Chiefs. But they're finally in a spot where they should be one of the feared teams, and yet we're still stuck in this mindset that should have been left in 2005, that we have to fear everyone else's roster. The Texans improved their pass rush. They improved their receiving core. I expect C.J. Stroud to get even better in year two. I expect the coaching staff, Bobby Slowick, first-year play caller, D'Amico Ryans, first-year head coach, I expect them to all level up. I think we have to be willing to accept that even though, okay, their schedule did get tougher, it did level up, so did the Texans. And I think they're going to be able to meet that challenge as they also get better to be able to meet a tougher schedule.
But I think, isn't it a combination platter, right? I mean, I think that it's kind of like when you look at it, there's no doubt they got better. There's no doubt that they improved this team. They did everything they can do internally. They're doing everything they can do to be in win mode and win now mode. But you still have to factor in that you are going to play a better schedule than you played a year ago, that you're going to be playing better opponents. They're going to play a different level of football that whether you say you have to be prepared for it or not, it can affect your overall wins and losses at the end of the year, no matter how good you got.
Yeah, I'm a little bit on like Brian's side of the sense of like the Texans are good enough to where it doesn't matter who you're playing, but I also think that the schedule is going to cost them a win or two, but not a spot in the playoffs, not a division title. And I think it's probably going to take another year to get to that point where like they're on the Chiefs stature of who cares, put whoever in front of. Now, I'm sure that they had that attitude in the locker room, but you're talking about the fan base. I think it's going to take another year of, okay, all right, we're fully bought in with D'Amico and with Stroud. And most people are already there, but I think they do want to see a second year to make sure. And maybe it is a little bit of battered fan syndrome where they need to see it to be 100% certain. 1-0-2-2, I think the Texans could win just as much. That's not more, though. Just as much isn't more. One thing I noticed with Stroud is that his play changes depending on his opponent. He plays better with a tougher challenge. I don't disagree with that.
So that's a lot of guys too. They play to the level of their competition. It's been a tried and true theory in sports for a long period of time.
No, I mean that it goes the other way too, though. Like there's been guys where they feast on bad opponents and rack up numbers against bad opponents, and then they're in a big game and they don't shine.
Sure.
They're awful. They're bad. So it goes both ways. It's not like consistent across the board.
But there is something there with Stroud.
It's just one way cut and dry.
Yeah, I think so too.
Like his worst game was probably the Panthers game, right? Mm-hmm.
Carolina. Jets. Now, he did get concussed in that game. And some of his better games are the ones that, you know, playoff-level teams. Tampa Bay, I mean, whatever. But they were a playoff
team.
They
were division champion.
At Cincinnati, one of his better games. I think that Texter's on to something. That's actually something I would like to see. Maybe that's part of being a rookie and not being consistent to, like, his, full 100% potential. That is something that needs to change, though. Because if the Texans want to be a team that don't have to worry about the schedule, that they're going to be, you know, a 10 to 12 win team every year and win the division every year, you got to beat the Sisters of the Poor. And you got to beat them, not necessarily badly, but you got to beat them. You can't lose against Carolina. You can't lose against the Jets.
Yeah, those are the games you don't want to look back and say, if we would have taken them more seriously. You have to attack every game still with the likelihood that you're going to pounce on them, do what you said, because every situation, every player, every team's different. I think that there are guys that play to level their competition and teams, and I think that there are other teams. The Atlanta game strikes me as another one where they just got absolutely – their pass defense was putrid. They got hammered by a team that was definitely, a lesser than.
That's not Stroud, though.
Yeah,
no.
That was Desmond Ritter.
No, I'm saying
Ritter
went nuts
like
and the defense had
famer.
No answer. But that's a team that you looked at the start of the year and you said, you're way better than them. You should pound them. And they beat you. So, I that's why I think the schedule matters. I still think they're a playoff team. But that's why if they don't win as many games as they did a year ago, even if they don't win the division, I don't think it's because they're a lesser-than team. I think it's more so because they're playing a tough opponents.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Looking through Stroud's good games, he played really good in the final week of the year against Indy, which was a playoff game. So that's kind of like a big game. Obviously, you go back to the Georgia game. They lost to the Jets by 24 at New York, but that's the game he got cut. Hurt, but yeah. Still, he was 10 for 23 prior to that. Like, that's a bad – that was a really good defense, but he was still 10 for 23.
It was pouring rain, too.
Yeah, but he's still 10 for 23.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't – like, the conditions that
– that was his worst game of the season.
That comes into play. Like, you have to perform. You have to be better than the other guy. Zach Wilson was playing in the pouring rain, and he had a better line than C.J. Stroud did. 27 of 37 against Arizona. His best yardage game was against Tampa. We threw for 470, threw for 300 against the Steelers, who weren't bad. That was probably the most dominating team win of the year. You know, beat the Steelers by 24.
Wasn't that coming off of 11 sacks in the first 2 weeks of the season and an offensive line that was depleted? So they thought
that was week four, I believe. Of the season.
Yeah, so it was week four. You're right that they started 0-2, and then they thought
with that offensive line the Steelers were going to run roughshod on crushing CJ, and I don't think they got sacked. They didn't get him.
That was the middle of three games of no sacks at all. After being sacked 11 times in the first 2 weeks. 713-780-ESPN. How much validity are you putting on the toughness of the schedule when it comes to the Houston Texans? 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, would you consider the Texans' offensive line a red flag? If not, why? And what other red flags do the Texans have? 713-780-3776. Also, the biggest stunner in sports has just happened. LeBron James's son, Bronny James, has been drafted by the Los Angeles Lakers. What a shock that Rich Paul, LeBron James, pulled off the power play of getting a non-NBA basketball player, Bronny James, to the L.A. Lakers. What a shock. We can talk about that on the other side, too. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Constellation Field. This is the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Gasolina, that's what I'm going to be throwing tonight. Killer Bees broadcasting live at Constellation Field in Sugarland, 92.5 night. Bronny James, drafted by the Los Angeles Lakers. Didn't go in the first round there, Brian. I went back and searched whenever I had this take. It was May 13th, so this is, 6 weeks ago? I said LeBron will power play the Lakers into drafting Bronny. We've known about this scenario for years. I'm not one to boast much. Who am I kidding? I boast all the time.
Patting yourself on the back.
This was the most predictable thing ever, that LeBron James, Rich Paul, were going to power play the Lakers, the NBA, into letting Bronny James slide to 55 and the Lakers drafting him.
No, there's no doubt about it, Jeremy. And the thing is that you had the ultimate power play in place. It's one thing to say, well, LeBron wants this, right? But now you've got the most powerful agent and agency in the business, LeBron's dear friend, representing him as well. So from an agent perspective, you got that angle covered, and the threats came from the workouts to don't draft Bronny. We're just telling you, and he's not doing a two-way deal, and he's doing this, and everything that an agent has to do to sway teams away. And then obviously LeBron working the angle from the Lakers of, you want me back, I want to play with my son, we're taking Bronny, that's the way it goes. So you got Pelinka, who's going to fall in place with whatever LeBron wants he gets, and boom, it's like, it's the worst-kept secret in all of basketball. It was only going to be the fun and games department of, would someone be willing to try and, to screw with it? Would Daryl be a guy that would be willing to try and take his chances to be that guy because he'd love the pub he got whether it worked out or not? And then you saw Tim Legler, who last night even said, if I'm the Celtics, I say, I take Bronny and I hold him ransom and say, I got your kid. What's the rent? What are you giving up to get him? Everyone in the NBA knew this was going to happen. It's just now that it happened, it's a big story for ESPN and everybody else.
Yeah, it's came to fruition like many thought it would. 2575, if Bronny is a non-NBA player, then how many other non-NBA players do you think there are in this draft? 58 draft picks, 30 to 35 non-NBA players. Like, it depends on what you're defining as NBA player. Like, does he come in for a few games and get garbage minutes? I wouldn't consider that really an NBA player, even though he's employed by an NBA team. But let's just call it like a rotational player. I would say that 30 to 35, maybe more, of the players, the 58 that are drafted today and yesterday, won't ever be rotational players in the NBA.
I think that you can get 35 to 40 because of the fact that you're playing with so many different dynamics. I looked at the second round, and there were actually several names that intrigued me that I was a little bit surprised didn't go in the first round, to where I said, in the right situation, those guys are rotational-type players. But it's definitely not the full second round, and that's why teams are so quick, along with the salary ramifications, to just throw away second-round picks, and they don't mean as much. Can they make an NBA roster? Can they be one of the the 15 guys on a team for a year or two? Sure. But, yeah, when you get down to rotational players, now you're going to have first-round picks that are going to be swings and misses too, because you're drafting on potential.
And look, I don't care that they did this. I think it's pretty cool, actually. They're going to be probably the first-ever father-son to play in an NBA game and to be on the same team doing it. And it's a second-rounder. Like, these second-rounders are dime a dozen. So I'm not blaming the Lakers for doing it. I'm more mocking these people are going to, hold them hostage, and they're going to – Brian said he's going to be a first-round draft pick. And quite frankly, if Bronny James was not Bronny James's or LeBron James' son, he wouldn't have been drafted in the NBA. That is the truth. Solid player, decent player. He's not an NBA player, but because he is the son of LeBron James, he's going to get this opportunity. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Like, I don't care that he's preventing some random guy from being the 15th player on the Los Angeles Lakers roster.
Yeah, the bigger issues are, one, he's going to take a roster spot on the full-time roster. It's not going to be a two-way because they Bogarted their way into that.
Does that bother you?
It can bother. I mean, like a J.J. Redick type guy, I'm just saying, normally if I'm a head coach and I'm looking for guys that with injuries and everything else, I'd like to have a guy on my full roster that I could pull from that I think is capable of giving me something if I need him. So from that perspective, I'm not the biggest fan of that, but I get it because of the situation. But when you look at it from the standpoint of his quotes going into the draft, I don't think my dad should matter. I think I should, rest on the abilities that I have to, that everybody should believe I'm an NBA player. I don't think anybody believed that he was an NBA player. They just knew the circumstances to be where he's going to be an NBA player. Yeah. But if you take his dad out of the equation and you tell me that his dad's name is Phil, Ted Smith from the Midwest, and there's no NBA correlation, are you telling me that just basing him on his merits, is he an NBA player this year, especially coming off of medical? I don't think he's drafted.
Yeah, I don't think he'll ever be a rotational player in the NBA, quite frankly. I don't like his game. I don't think he's a very good shooter. I think he's small. I don't think he can handle the point guard. But I think it's cool. Like, I know that I come across very negative in terms of this. I think it's really cool that LeBron and Bronny are going to be in the same organization. Blaine says they can send him to the G League, but NBA money. They'll probably send him back and forth, I bet. It's going to be awkward, like him making road trips with his old man. Like, could you imagine, like, the team charter, and they're going to, like, this big city, and you got the dad and the son that are together on this team charter to Miami? It's weird.
And that's the other thing too. If you're another player on this team now, especially you're kind of the back end of the roster type guys, don't mess with Bronny, because it has more ramifications than just messing with another guy at the end of the roster.
6813, if you take LeBron out of the equation, Bronny never makes it to USC. I wouldn't go that far. I do think that Bronny had a chance to be a solid Division I college basketball player. He would have needed some development, especially after the medical. Like, the medical did set his development back 6 months, maybe even 6 months. I still think he would have been a high D1 type of player. So I don't agree with that.
Well, I think it's always going to be tough, right? Because it's a no-win proposition for the kid himself, because no matter where he goes, there are going to be colleges that wanted to recruit him, yes, because they think that he could play Division I basketball, but two, because if LeBron's going to be coming to see his games and being around the program, that's going to give us a totally different light with a lot of people in terms of how our program sits. So it's difficult because of the fact that all along the way, the association with his dad, when he was coming out of high school, he went from a 4-star to suddenly in the McDonald's All-American game and getting 5-star recognition as a top 40 recruit in the country. And you can't tell me because he made this massive jump in one half season of high school basketball in AAU.
Yeah. Someone asked, what happens whenever LeBron retires? Do they cut Bronny? It's a good question.
I think it's pretty likely.
I mean, it's the last spot on the roster. Maybe they fulfill the contract, but potentially, yeah. I mean, the reason we know the reason he's on this team. 1592, LeBron's going to sign a new contract to be star player, head coach, GM, and president of the Lakers this upcoming season. And the key from L.A. said that the Lakers won the draft because they drafted that senior citizen in the first round out of Tennessee who can't move laterally. And then they drafted LeBron James' son. That's why he thinks the Lakers won the draft. He from L.A. Stick to other things.
Shocker that he would have that opinion. I like the Connect, but you know, the fact I was surprised he fell to 17. Yeah, but don't give me that.
2575. Michael Jordan's son played at UCF. I think he earned his college offer. Bronny was a high D1 player. He wasn't going to be a guy who was an instant impact player. He might have been actually without the cardiac arrest. He was a top 100 player. I think that Bronny would have been a solid college player. I have no problem him being in a high D1. I don't think nepotism was in play there. I do think nepotism was in play today, but that's okay. That's all right. Back to the Texans' schedule impacting their record. 6-2-2-5. Fair. Going into last season, I felt like we weren't going to do as good as we did. So if we, Texans, win the same amount of games this year, I feel like we're on pace and on schedule. He said 10-17, but he meant 10-7. Yeah, Brian, would you be okay with a 10-7? Like saying like the schedule, you know, that's a hot take saying that they won't improve their wins?
I mean, I'd be okay with it because I think 10-7 gets you into the playoffs, and ultimately that's all that matters. I just personally believe they're going to do better than that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like okay with it, I would not, you know, be mad or
not
call
over the moon though.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't call this tech. I wouldn't come on the radio and call the Texans season a disappointment if they go.
Would
10
you
and
do
7.
It off the radio?
No, I would not even in the comfort of my own home yelling at you know off to my wife and kids that they were disappointment. I wouldn't even do that. But I expect more from them. I think they could be an 11-12 win team, but if they go 10-7, still win the division, make the playoffs, then I would not call that disappointment.
1-0-2-2. I think the Texans could win just as much. One thing I noticed with Stroud is that he's good against good teams. Another one of that ilk. And then Key from LA, this first place schedule that the Texans have will motivate CJ to play better. Maybe if you're calling on that to give you extra motivation, that kind of bothers me. Like the whole I think that stuff's overrated. Like you see that message board, bulletin board material. If a professional athlete needs somebody else to say something in the papers about him to elevate their game to the next level, I don't love that actually. That's very Jadavian Clowney to me.
It's also Michael Jordan though. Because when you watch The Last Dance and you talk about everything that they said, he created his own make-believe tensions and you know, whatever you want to say, down people were taking shots at him or whatever, just so he could motivate himself on a nightly basis to keep doing the things he did at the level that he did. What was it, the kid from Washington, the rookie, and he made up this whole story about how the kid was talking to him and he got him, so he came out and dropped 40 or 35 in the first half the next game to use it as motivation. And it's just something that he did.
How many times was Jordan considered lazy and didn't show up for games, though? Like he might have did that before every single game to like fire him up, but and sometimes like you said it didn't even exist. Like he was creating the narratives that weren't even there. So I don't know if he necessarily needed the quotes in the papers because it seems like he had no problem coming up with any sort of
that
motivation.
That could be what type of player CJ Stroud is, though. I think if we're going with that, I mean, and that might be a benefit though of a tougher schedule. If CJ Stroud is the type of guy that is constantly looking for anything, whether it be real or not, to give him a chip on the shoulder to fire him up, then a tougher schedule, being in the line, being on Sunday Night Football, being on Monday Night Football, being in a bigger spotlight might be something, not that he needs it because I think he's self-motivated anyway, but that might be something kind of like Michael Jordan that he would use as fuel for the fire.
Now, on the other side of the equation, that you don't, because there's not many Michael Jordans in the history of sports, but Michael Jordan was also known to play 36 holes and drink 18 beers if he was playing a lesser
CJ Stroud's going on every podcast in the land.
Yeah, and would still go out there and drop 35.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. We'll get to the red flags for the Texans tomorrow. We got to get out of here for Heidi Watney. Heidi Watney covers Major League Baseball for MLB Network and Apple TV. She will be the field reporter when the Astros take on the Mets tomorrow night on Apple TV. Heidi Watney joins us next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. ProDuck Hoops, what you need is what you need this summer to get the kids out of the house, to give you a little bit of a stress relief, whatever the case may be. You need a goal from ProDuck Hoops. They make the highest quality basketball goals you will ever find. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, authentic feel that you see in the arenas, the gyms. Stainless steel hardware, rust-proof. You have to have that in Houston, of course. Breakaway rim, and it's height adjustable, which factors into the breakaway rim. You can lower it down, throw down some jams. You don't have to worry about anything because that breakaway rim is going to keep you safe. The basketball stanchion overhangs, too, so you don't have to worry about rolling your ankle on that stanchion. Thor, their new goal. You can raise and lower the goals with a drill. Lightning adjust feature. It's fun to do. It's easy to do. It's simple to do. 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. It's idiot-proof for guys like me. Their accessories are next level, too. LED light kits for night play. It's a little warm in Houston. You probably know that. You don't want to go out when it's too hot. You want to go out when the sun goes down. Get LED light kits, and you can do that. Backstop nets. You don't have to chase the basketball around and waste time when you want to be shooting or throwing down some jams. You can order everything, including professional installation online as well. That's right. The pros from ProDunk Hoops will professionally install your goal. Perfect height. Perfectly straight. You don't need a ladder. You don't need a level. You need a recliner as they work on their on your goal and do all the installation. Call 281-351-9822, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Constellation Field. This is the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live, Constellation Field in Sugar Land. ESPN 97.5, 92.5 night at the ballpark. And let's go out to the HRNP guest line, being joined by Heidi Watney. Heidi will be on the call for tomorrow's Mets-Astros game on Apple TV. Heidi will be the field reporter. Heidi, thanks for taking a few minutes, spending it with the Bees this evening. Astros suddenly playing good baseball. 7 wins in a row. They've turned a poor start into maybe an above 500 start at the midpoint of the year. In your mind, how have the Astros been able to flip the script on the season?
Well, the biggest thing for the Astros really has been starting pitching. I mean, they've had so many injuries to their rotation this season, and they're still in the thick of that. But the starting pitching has really turned it on lately with the four starters that they've had. And hopefully for them, you know, they're going to get some guys back in the next couple of months, which should help. But, they, you know, also with the trade deadline, I'm sure they're going to be in the market for another starting pitcher, especially with how well they've played. They've certainly earned that shot to keep going for it.
Heidi, when you look at this team from all the trials and tribulations of the start of the year after being one of the favorites to get back to at least another American League Championship Series and possibly a World Series, to what's happened the first half of the year, a lot of people wrote them off already and said there's no chance this team makes the playoffs. Now looking at where they are and with, you know, the circumstances of where Seattle is and the other playoff team, the potential wildcard teams, is this a roster that you believe, whether they make moves at the deadline or not, is good enough to compete for the ALCS and more?
Well, I wouldn't be among that group of people that wrote the Astros off, especially with the track record that they have. I mean, they've been the most dominant team of the past decade, and they have a lot of that roster still intact. I mean, the starting pitching this year was decimated by injuries early, but, you know, with hopes to get a couple of guys back, coming back soon, hopefully. And Verlander will be back at some point. Garcia is starting his rehab assignment this weekend. But the core of the position player group is still intact, and that division in Seattle has one of the best rotations in all of baseball, but they just can't seem to string together the offense. So the division is certainly within their sights, especially now with the 7-game win streak heading into this series. And I just feel like, you know, the offense has started clicking there. You know, maybe there was just a little bit of a transition period, even though Joe Espada had been in the organization for a long time. Now he's the guy. But this is generally the time that teams that are going to compete start getting going. Most teams aren't like the Phillies and the Yankees that cover to cover just dominate the ball. Year in, year out, you see that. I mean, the Rangers and the Diamondbacks last year, if you had asked on June, whatever today is, 27th of last season, who'd be in the World Series, you would have been laughed out of the room with, if you said, you know, the Rangers and the Diamondbacks, and yet here we are. So I definitely think that the Astros have the talent. I think they're going to be in the trade market, like a lot of people, for another starting pitcher, but I think they have the offense that's certainly capable of making a run, too.
Heidi Watney joining us on the HR&P guest line. You mentioned Joe Espada. You get a feel a little bit more of it nationally than we do locally. What is the narrative on Espada prior to this year and then taking over the manager seat for the Houston Astros?
Well, I'm a huge, huge, huge Joe Espada fan. I've seen the work he has done as a bench coach with the Astros, previously with the Yankees. Baseball is a pretty small game, and I've been around it for a long time now. So is Joe. And you cross paths with these guys. And I had earmarked him quite a few years ago as a potential manager. And, in fact, when the San Francisco Giants, the team I grew up rooting for, had hired Gabe Kapler, I was really hoping for Joe Espada in that moment in time. And he didn't get the job, and it certainly, you know, had worked out for him to come up under Dusty and A.J. Hinch before that with the Astros. But I just think he's a great leader. He's a great baseball mind. And I'm happy for him to get this, you know, get this experience. And I just think with anyone, I mean, Carlos Mendoza on the other side, if you look at the matchup here tomorrow night, with anyone, as soon as they get that manager role, there's going to be a transition as players are kind of looking at them and analyzing them. The media is going to overanalyze them because that's what we do. But I don't think that necessarily anything he's done has been something that you can look at him and say, oh, you know, that's a terrible managing position. Not at all. And I think he's a very smart guy, and you're definitely going to learn some different things when you're in the big chair. But the team seems to be rolling now under his guidance, and I think it's just going to keep going along.
Heidi, I'm curious on kind of that same vein, because of the fact that we do, as media members, you know, have a tendency to overanalyze, but we're, you know, obviously on top of this team and sometimes too close to it, it seems like. But the perception that I always ask the national people more about is the perception all year that Jim Crane is actually pulling all the strings and he's making all the decisions for this team along with Jeff Bagwell. And look, Dana Brown has a track record coming from Atlanta, and we know what he can do with talent evaluation, things like that. But I'm curious if there is the perception in your mind that this is Crane pulling all the strings along with Bagwell instead of guys like Dana Brown.
Well, I think before Dana Brown came in that there was a transition period where Jim Crane was more involved, and we saw that with some of the, you know, Justin Verlander's previous contract before he then signed with the Mets and came back. That was Jim Crane's doing, to my knowledge. And then obviously the Jose Abreu thing that didn't end up working out was before they hired Dana Brown. So hopefully kind of maybe learned a little bit of a lesson from that, and is maybe a little more hands off. But look, it's his team, and you know, he can look to whoever he wants for guidance and be as involved as he wants. That's an owner's prerogative. But one of the things that makes a really smart owner is realizing where your shortcomings are and where someone else is who you need to lean on for to make the big decisions. But I mean, it's an owner's prerogative to be involved in his team, and I think he does have a perception though nationally of being involved, not necessarily overly involved like other owners with teams, but definitely involved. And I don't think necessarily to harmful extent in some situations, the abusive situation notwithstanding.
Heidi, what's going on?
I'm sorry, I'm in traffic in New York. If you're hearing all the honking,
yeah, we are.
I had thought when I landed at 4:05, I would have been safely to my hotel by 6:30, and yet here we are in New York City, and I am still sitting in the car. So I apologize for that.
Armpit of America, New York. Just kidding. I say that because I'm in Houston. Heidi Watney joining us on the HR&P guest line. Heidi, I'm a fan of Apple TV. I really like the quality. I think the production's very good. I think the picture is very good. Tell us your origin story with Apple TV, how you got involved, and how it's grown over the years.
There is no one. I'm now under a subway track. I apologize for all the ambient noise. Again, I thought that 2.5 hours would have gotten
no. It's fine.
It sounds
but,
okay.
No, Apple TV, best picture quality in all of sports, and I have asked the very intelligent people at Apple why our picture quality is so much better than anyone else, even when you see, you know, NFL games or different sports that claim to be in 4K, and it's because that basically we shoot it in true 4K. There's only one station that can truly process the video, so it's sent to that particular station. It's up, you know, it's not shot in 1080 and up-res. It is like true, amazing picture quality, and it just kind of falls in line with Apple, right? Everything they want to do is streamlined. It looks good. It's user friendly. And that's what Apple wants to do with this broadcast. Bring fans closer to the game. Bring them inside the broadcast. That's why we do these, you know, on-deck interviews, or we do the manager interviews in-game, or we have this great camera called the Megalodon, our regular Megalodon operator stack, and he's getting right in the face of these guys. I'm sure it drives players like Max Scherzer nuts, but he's bringing the fans closer to the game, and that's Apple's whole thing, is about a fan experience. It's the experience with your iPhone, and it's the experience with interacting with the game. As close as MLB and the teams will let us, we try to bring you inside, and that's why, I mean, and just, it's a stunning picture quality, and we get out all the bells and whistles. I mean, that's just what Apple does, because they're a technology company, and I love it. This is the third year on the package. I've been in it since the first year in 2022. It's just a more, kind of a fresher perspective on a broadcast. But we have, you know, great announcers. We have Xavier Scruggs and Wayne Randazzo. We normally have Wayne Randazzo and Dontrell Willis. Dontrell had a prior engagement this week. But Xavier Scruggs is just a superstar in terms of analyzing baseball, too. And I'm excited about this broadcast because you've got two teams that have both been surging up the standings and doing really well lately. And it's so much more fun when you have two teams come in that have been on a roll, right? There's just so much more energy to the game and excitement for the game. So you've got that with the Mets and Astros. And, you know, if I ever make it to my hotel or to the ballpark tomorrow, it's going to be a good game.
I was going to say, but just like anybody that's called games previously, you know that you see the schedule at the start of the year. Sure, there's sometimes a flex opportunity. But when you get two teams like this that are hungry, that are chasing, that are on a roll, as you mentioned, it's got to up your game as well, too, to know that, hey, there's another level of excitement for us calling the game, because it's not going to be a dog game the way it's set out to be. This is something that everybody's going to be watching.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Astros come in riding a 7-game win streak. The Mets have had the best record in baseball since the end of May. So you get excited about these kinds of matchups. And then you have two first-year managers in Carlos Mendoza and Joe Espada. You know, the two have known each other for years, good friends in the game. That adds another element in. You have, you know, Francisco Lindor, who's just, you know, Mr. Smile. He's doing well. And, you know, ever since the Mets moved him into the leadoff spot, their offense has really taken off. He's really taken off. They had the players-only meeting. I mean, talk about a team with a lot of drama. They've apparently got, like, a purple, you know, McDonald's mascot named Grimace that's, like, leading the charge for their team. But, you know, a lot of fun storylines with these two, and that's, you know, that's the fun part for me, is getting to tell them all to the fans and people who maybe watch these teams every day, and the people who don't watch the teams every day that need, you know, a little bit more of an introduction to where these guys are right now.
The Grimace Mets and the Streaking Strohs. Heidi, thanks so much for the time. Hope you get to the hotel safely. And have a great call tomorrow night. We'll be watching.
Thank you so much. If you look on my X handle, I'll post a link for the game, and usually I can get the good folks at that to share, like, a free 2-month trial. So I'll probably post that tomorrow morning if anyone's looking where to find the game. At Heidi
Walker. Good deal. At Heidi Watney on Twitter, and I still say Twitter. I appreciate the time, Heidi.
Be safe out there.
My pleasure. Take care, guys.
Heidi Watney will be on the call tomorrow. Astros Mets, Apple TV, field reporter. What should be a good series up in New York. The Astros starting a 10-game roadie, first one tomorrow night. All right, car wreck of the day. What is your car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. What are you nominating for the car wreck of the day? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, another word from my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the Neograft procedure and PRP. He does a ton of stuff. If you or your significant other have thought about spa treatments, Botox, plastic surgery, he's awesome. But my personal experience has been with the Neograft and PRP, and I'm here to tell you it's a game changer. And you can get all the information on how you can get your hair back from Doc Linville because you listen to us. And that information is going to be given to you free. You're going to get a consultation with Doc and his staff. You can ask questions. You can get answers. They're going to explain the different procedures they do. They'll look at your hairline and they'll tell you, hey, you're a candidate for PRP. You don't need the NeoGraft. You've got enough follicles. You just need them to get stronger and thicker so you get more coverage. And maybe they'll be honest with you and say, hey, you're past the stage of PRP, but we can get your hair back with the NeoGraft. The NeoGraft, quite simply, is taking hair where you're never going to lose it, and that genetically isn't going to happen along the sides and the back of your head. You're never going to lose that hair. And he, Doc Linville just moves it to where you need it most. Maybe your forehead has become an 8-head. Maybe the fact that you got the bald spot on the top of your head and you're not proud of it. It can change. It can be fixed, and it's your own hair. Go to 975hair.com right now. Because you listen to us and you're interested in him, you get that consultation for free. Sign up right there on the website. Get your questions answered. Get them to explain everything to you. And then there's no signing on the dotted line, money out of pocket, or commitment to be made. You can elect to actually proceed and keep talking to them, or you can just say, hey, thanks, but no thanks, I'm not interested. But at least you get all the information, because this procedure is a game changer. I did it. I couldn't have been happier with it then. I'm even more happy with it now, because the hair is there. It's growing. It's strong. It's long, and it improves your self-confidence because you get a better overall appearance. Check him out and tell him I sent you by. Go to 975hair.com and go see my friend Doc Linville. He is the best in the business.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. I'll give you a f***ing bone, you prick. Where's my f***ing money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
9458 says, did y'all hear Joe George say he'll never speak bad about y'all again?
I heard it.
You did? What'd he say?
He said that he, and I told BMAC this before we went on the air, he said that he wasn't listening to us, but that he opened up the text messages this morning and happened to see that someone during our segment on Biggest Backstabbers mentioned him. So he was starting to bash us today and then went, but you know what? I'm not going to bash them anymore.
I wish he would.
Yeah, show content. Go ahead, bash us.
I'm a great counterpuncher. I'm like Floyd Mayweather Jr. I like it whenever I get bashed.
So Tank Dell will put you in the short kings list?
Yeah, I'm in a weight class. I like people coming at me. I like the counterpunch. I like to throw a little counterpunch. All right, 713-780-3776. What is your car wreck of the day? Blankers.
Kyle McCann, Oakland A's catcher. Kyle McCann was running the bases last night in a game against the Angels, had a runner in front of him, lost his balance, was stumbling, and neglected to touch home plate. It's okay because you can go back and touch home plate, right? But in the process, as he was stumbling, he went to fall down, and the runner that already scored assisted him and kept him from falling down, and he was ruled out.
Oh, I saw headlines of this.
So the run came off the board?
So the run does not count. They challenged it. They found out. And the umpire said, yes, he missed the plate. Yes, he could have gone back and touched home plate. However, when the runner that scored in front of him assists or helps him in the base running process, he's out.
I think you got the wrong guy as the car wreck of the day, though. I don't think it's on Kyle McCann, who was fumbling, bumbling, stumbling. I think it's on Armando Alvarez for helping him up, not knowing the rule. Hey, I'm not touching you, but go touch the plate. I think that's bad teammates.
Well, I think it should be both of them then.
That's fair. I mean, to rumble, stumble, bumble is car wreck.
But you should know, too, the rule that I can't touch the guy.
Alvarez should have known the rule. I'm watching it now. I just pulled it up. Alvarez grabs him, like softly grabs him, but then gives him a little nudge back to the plate when McCann was already going there. I put more fault. Both can be nominated for sure, but I put more fault on Alvarez.
I think as a team, it could even be your coaching staff teaching you this, but Kyle McCann also has got to know the rule.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm a big league coach, I'm not thinking that I need to teach a player not to touch a guy who's still...
It's a very specific thing.
Yeah, like the guy's a professional big league player.
How many times does that come up?
But I mean, in spring training, these are the kind of things you go over?
Maybe.
But I think it's on both guys. I think if you think that the runner in front should know, then Kyle McCann should also know that if I don't touch a base, I can't touch a guy.
Well, McCann didn't have a choice in being touched. McCann wasn't like, I mean, McCann.
But he could be going, whoa, 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 whoa.
But he was stumbling.
I know, but at the same time, he could still be yelling, don't touch me.
I mean, I wouldn't think that I'd be touched,
it's
though.
It's split second, though.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think I'd be touched. I'm going to nominate the USA Under-20 World Championship football team of the International Federation of American Football.
What'd they do?
They lost to Japan 41-20. Yep. Now, who in the world is playing for this Under-20 World Championship?
That was the first question
like,
I
are these
had.
Kids homeless? Do they belong to the Twitchers? Like, how are they losing to Japan? Like, and there's,
almost
like,
blast.
any good high school football players not playing here. Any college football, I don't think so.
Oh, no. What's his name went off on this today? McAfee?
McAfee.
And they rattled off a list of guys that have played on that team previously, and it was like NFL who's who from quarterbacks
really?
To like play to defensive players to all these different
so these
players.
Like-
Jordan Poyer was talking about the fact this is because he played on that team. Mac Jones and other quarterbacks have quarterbacked that team. And they're like – and then they had a former GM on who was like, did you see the fact that the Japanese running back was running through it looking like he won the Heisman Trophy and no one could tackle him? And they were all just getting all ticked off. That's embarrassing.
I would like to know who's playing on this USA team.
Is this so
I want to know like what level of recruits these guys are. Because if you're under 20, like those are college kids.
Now, these are alum. The guys they were mentioning are all NFL players that had previously played. I don't know who's playing on it these days. And how, like you said, college recruiting and NIL, all that is affecting now, maybe. But in the past, they've had a hell of a good roster.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine that this team that's losing to Japan by 3 touchdowns has anybody decent on it.
I hope not.
I can't anybody imagine decent. It. But without seeing the list, it's hard to know.
Katy High School would blow Japan out. I'm dead serious.
North Shore would blow
Japan out. Like, I can't imagine there's anybody good currently
South
on this
Lake
team.
South Lake Carroll would blow out.
Duncanville.
All of them.
Yeah.
All of them. Porter High School might beat them. Like, all of them. All of them would destroy them. Alex wanted to nominate the Lakers.
Yeah, that was going to be one of mine.
For selecting Bronny. Why? I don't know.
The Lakers are making a business decision. I think it's the fact that Rich Paul and LeBron, to some degree, affected the entire process.
I mean, yeah, Rich Paul, I mean, certainly can deserve a nominee. But, I mean, it's using a roster spot and a pick on a player that, as we've all described, is not an NBA player. I get why they're doing it. It's to keep LeBron. So, basically, their second-round draft pick is LeBron.
You can't fault the Lakers organization and Pelinka and them because they can't afford to lose LeBron.
And
he is their franchise.
What percentage of second-rounders, late second-round, final 5 picks of the second round, contribute to an NBA roster?
So but like, when the agent says he can't be a two-way and don't take my player, if you're going to take a guy in the final 5 picks, best-case scenario, he's probably a two-way player.
Josh from Seabrook, car wreck of the day, is Houston Troll Squad. The Twitter is dedicated to bashing on the Houston Astros. Deleted their page today after making a bet earlier this season saying that the Astros would not get above 500 by August. That sounds like something King of Twitch would do.
At least they didn't bet on it. But even if they did, they wouldn't pay.
He did make it. He said he made a bet. Earlier this season. I don't know what the bet was. I saw something
about
that.
Maybe it was they shut down their account.
I saw H-Town Wheelhouse going at the guy. I didn't quite understand what it was, but now I know, I guess. Josh from Seabrook, thank you for breaking it down. Car wreck of the day, Joe George. Not going to say why he was nominated there.
I mean, nominees got to go to the NFL as well for getting hit with that antitrust lawsuit. Apparently having to pay because of the Sunday Ticket antitrust suit, $4.7 billion. Which could get escalated to over $14 billion being paid out.
Screwing the fans is what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's going to, what, get like 18 cents for this?
They said like $1,000 per person in the antitrust.
That's
I'm
pretty
mad
good.
I'm mad no one contacted me to get in on the lawsuit.
I know, you missed out, Joel.
They thought
you'd screw it up.
Sunday ticket guy forever. Yeah,
you could have bought another softball bat.
Yeah.
One.
92.5 night out here at Constellation Field. Space Cowboys coming up at 7:05 at 92.5 Hall of Fame. Brad Gilmore, toughest guy on that show. Booker T is co-host at 7:00. And then Soccer Matters coming up at 6, going over U.S. men's national team at Copa America and then the Euro bracket overview as well with Glenn Davis. All right, what's winning car wreck of the day?
I mean, my vote was for the Lakers, but it seems like you guys are completely
out
on that
one. I think it's this football team.
Oh, you're right.
I'll go that. That's embarrassing.
It's American football.
You created
football.
The game of American football,
good
and
call.
You lost.
Embarrassing our country. All right, that wins it, you Americans. All right, thanks to B-Rod for doing all the hard work. Brian, on-site engineering. He's Blank. I'm Brandon. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Goodbye.
ESPN 97.5.